listening to Joe Barnes Online. We're talking about building businesses, creating an income for life, and having the freedom to work from anywhere in the world with passion and energy. For want of a better phrase, grabbing life by the proverbial balls. My name is Joe Barnes. Let's make it happen. Howdy, 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 folks. Welcome to today's podcast. Today I am speaking to Alan Burt. Alan is the founder and CEO of Blue Stout, an e-commerce consultancy company working with six and seven-figure brands to help them to identify the levers in their business that they can pull on the hardest to have the biggest impact. I actually worked with Alan last year on my e-commerce business, and he proved to be a powerhouse of knowledge, plus just an uber nice guy. In today's episode, we explore the biggest mistakes he sees brands making, the critical things you must be doing if you're running any kind of e-commerce business online, why micro e-commerce brands are the future, and he expertly, one of my favorite parts of the podcast, he expertly breaks down the key tenets of an extremely successful eight-figure e-commerce brand. Enjoy my conversation with Alan, which, as you'll notice, it gets steadily more energetic as we explore everything e-commerce, entrepreneurship, social media, and everything else that we cover in today's episode. So, enjoy. Hey, Alan, how are you doing? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Alan, I would love to start. I know this is kind of a bit of a sort of a cliche, but I'd love to start with you just giving us a little bit about your background, who you are, what you've done, and what has kind of led to the creation of Blue Stout.
Yeah, happy to. So my name's Alan Burt, and I run a company called Blue Stout. And it's, you know, in short, we are essentially an e-commerce consulting company that six and seven figure e-commerce entrepreneurs help them scale. So my background is, you know, way back when I used to work in finance and had a brief stint in the nonprofit world, and then actually started an e-commerce business. And it's from my experience running and operating that e-commerce business. We took the team from that original company and we turned it into Blue Stout, and we took all the learnings and strategies and things that we saw work in that business. And now we apply it to our clients' businesses.
What kind of e-commerce business were you in?
So we actually operated a travel company. So we built and sold travel packages. And the real premise of the business was based around the idea that if you go and try to book a, for example, like an adventure travel trip, say you want to go hike Machu Picchu in Peru, packages for those trips were always overwhelmingly expensive. But the U.S. companies that ran them always hired local guides. So what we did is we went and found those exact same types of trips that the big companies were selling and packaged them the same way. But instead of sending our own personal tour guides along, we hired local guides and then gave all of our travelers an app on their iPhone or iPad that they could use to travel with. So it provided an independent travel experience with local guides for a fraction of the cost of the big travel vacations.
That sounds awesome.
It was awesome.
I love that. As a traveler myself, I love the idea of that. So why didn't you carry on with that? What happened with that business?
Yeah, that's a long story, but essentially the company did well for, so we started off as actually a sort of a flash sale business, then we pivoted to that model, which actually worked really well. By the time we had pivoted though, we had essentially kind of used up all of our capital that we were using to fund the product. And we were looking for partners, and it's probably a whole nother story for another day, but we actually were in the process of being acquired. And made some very rookie mistakes in my early days of trying to sell that company that ultimately ended up causing the acquisition not to go through and then us running out of money and having to shut the company down. So it's one of those that it was a really hard entrepreneurial lesson learned, and it's something that I think we'll probably come back to and we'll probably restart the business at some point in the future. It was one of the things that poor planning on the front end is what sort of ultimately led to the reason to having it be shut down. But so it was unfortunate.
Do you know though, I mean, let's go straight in with our first sort of entrepreneurial lesson here, Alan. I mean, that's, you know, what did you get out of that? I mean, this is a great thing, I think, with people who are building businesses. A lot of people, you know, they feel terrible if they don't get it right or if things don't go right or they're you know, the huge fear of failure, all of that kind of stuff. But at the end of, because we've all been there and we've all made horrendous mistakes, which have caused, you know, losses of a lot of money over our time as entrepreneurs, but through every huge mistake has also been a massive learning experience. So what are some of the key things you got from that experience?
You know what, it's we could probably spend an hour talking about the learnings, right? The you know, there was a number, right? So the first was a really understanding your metrics around your business before you get too deep into it. So when we started the company, it was a fantastic product, it was a fantastic market. But what we realized as we got really deep into it is that the sales cycles are really long for travel. So it's not like selling a physical good with a price point that's, you know, under $100. You can cycle through those sales. You can learn about it very quickly. You can learn very quickly whether or not you've got a strong repeat purchase rate, you know, what the lifetime value of a customer is. And then that lets you understand how much you can spend to then acquire a customer. The problem with travel is that somebody might buy a product or a trip from you, and they might not come back to buy another one for another 1 to 2 years later. So the sales cycle for determining your lifetime value of that customer is really long. So it's really hard to understand what your front end metric needs to be and what your customer acquisition costs can be in order to be profitable. So it took us a really long time to figure that out. And ultimately, we just didn't have enough runway to do it. And then we ended up sort of botching an acquisition. So those two things compounded. But the first real lesson is, you know, making sure you're really digging into your metrics and making sure that before you get started, you're understanding what those numbers are. You know, at least having an educated guess of what they're going to be so you can start off on the right foot.
Okay, so you're saying the first key thing is, or the main key thing is just really understanding and digging deep into the metrics and understanding exactly how your business is going to become profitable and all of that kind of stuff, correct?
Absolutely, especially in e-commerce, because at the end of the day, e-commerce is essentially an equation, right? It's traffic in the door times your conversion rate times your average order value, right? And that's what's going to equal your revenue. And then you factor in what your repeat purchase rate is, and that's what's going to give you your customer lifetime value.
Yeah.
And once you understand customer lifetime value, you can understand what you could spend to get somebody in the door as traffic. So it's those metrics, and it's an equation that doesn't change. And so when you start trying to estimate what those costs are to begin with is probably the first thing you should be doing regardless if you're starting an e-commerce company, is figuring out and estimating what do you think that conversion is going to be? What do you think your average order value is going to be? What do you think your repeat purchase rate is going to be? And that way you at least have an idea as to what you can start to spend to start acquiring those first customers. And then at least once you start, you know, religiously measuring those metrics, so you know how you need to adjust to make sure you maintain profitability.
Okay, so we'll come back to a bit about those metrics and everything, Alan, because as much as entrepreneurs don't like to think of themselves as accountants, numbers are hugely important. But before we get there, just tell us a bit more about what BlueStout actually does as a company.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So we you know, from those learnings, right, and from figuring out what really does matter and what really does work in e-commerce, we started an agency that focuses on designing and developing e-commerce stores that perform. Right. So these are stores with high conversion rates, high average order values, and high repeat purchase rates. And so our primary focus is working with typically the owners or the, you know, the executives of an e-commerce business that are doing typically six or seven figures in revenue, and helping them identify in their business what are the levers available to them that they can pull the hardest to produce the biggest results. And typically it comes back to looking at those core metrics I just mentioned. So how well is your site converting? How, when somebody does convert, what is the order value they're checking out with? And then what does that repeat purchase rate look like? Mm-hmm. And depending upon what those metrics look like, we go in and we help them improve the ones that are going to produce the highest return for them.
And typically, what type of e-commerce businesses do you work with? I mean, is it a really broad mm-hmm. range, or do you find that you tend to kind of go into specific types of businesses?
Yeah, so we work with a broad range of verticals, but the core tenets are we love working with entrepreneurs that are developing their own brand. So when it comes to looking and building high-performing sites, you know, one of the most important pieces is branding and messaging and understanding what's the unique value that you bring to the market. And it's really difficult to do that unless you're building a really robust, solid brand. So we love working with businesses that are either building their own products, you know, manufacturing and selling their own labels, or have developed, as a reseller, have developed a really unique angle as a reseller that allows them to differentiate themselves in the market. So we don't typically work with, there's a huge movement right now to do like AliExpress and very specific drop shipping and AliExpress drop shipping, which is really more like an arbitrage form of e-commerce. We typically don't work with those types of entrepreneurs. We like to work with people who are really building a brand that they're trying to scale and turn into a big brand.
And the benefit of that is, I guess, is that you've got this lovely, great big business that eventually you can go on to sell. If you've built this really strong brand,
absolutely,
then, it's something that's going to give you a super exit strategy. As somebody who, obviously you and I have worked together, just a little bit of background there. Alan was giving me some help last year with our website attached to our Amazon business. Through the year, it really dawned on me, when you come out of Amazon and you start to build your own audience, etc., how important that brand really. I mean, you've either got to have an absolute top drawer product, which is unique, it's got something that's super special about it, or you've got to have just an incredibly strong brand, or ideally both.
Yeah, ideally both, right? So the superstars are the ones that have both, right? Mm. But the trick is always, and it doesn't have to be, I think the first, another good lesson for, especially for e-commerce entrepreneurs, is that the product doesn't have to be 100% unique, right? You don't have to come up with something that has never been created or never been tried before. But what you do need to do is come up with something that's better, right? And you need to be able to message and communicate why it's better. And the reason why it's better needs to resonate with your audience, right? So the connection that we always talk about is you have to determine what is your unique selling proposition for either the product or the brand or both. And does that unique selling proposition actually match up with what your target audience cares about? And if you can get that aligned and then build a brand around that, you can be successful in e-commerce.
So what do you think is some key steps? People wanting to build an e-commerce business and kind of starting from scratch, what do you think are some of the key steps that they need to put in place to begin to build their own e-commerce business?
Yeah, so I think the first is you got to have a product, right? You have to figure out what you're going to sell, or you need to have a market niche that has a real pain point. And I think a lot of people get stuck on this. I think there's a lot of people out there that want to get into e-commerce. They see really successful stores and they see sort of the Shopify movement, and everybody wants to get started in it, but they don't know where to start or how to start, right? So my recommendation is always to do two things, right? A, either scratch your own niche because you are your market. And I guess really there's sort of three things you can do. Scratch your own niche, find a product that solves a problem for you, right? So that'd be A. B is going out and find the market first, right? Instead of trying to come up with this incredible product concept that nobody's ever done before that you think is going to change the world, go out and find a market that's got a real pain and talk to that market and figure out what they need and then develop a product around that. That's sort of the second option. And the third option, which we see a lot of now because the barriers to entering e-commerce are so low, setting up a Shopify store and getting it set up is really pretty straightforward. Facebook ads, you can throw money at Facebook ads right off the bat, and it's straightforward to do so. Going out in the market and finding products that already are successful, that already exist, that maybe could be better, right? Mm-hmm. Or products that have had moderate success in maybe one market but could be moved over to another market. So you don't have to come up with something that's, never been done before, but you do need to come up with something that's better than what's out there right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm just as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking about it. And if I were going to start an e-commerce business again today, then I would definitely do either something in the travel niche because I love traveling. Mm-hmm. Or this is a bit of a girly thing, I think, Alan, I would definitely do something I was in a shop was it Singapore? I think it was Singapore. And I was in this amazing store that had all of these diaries and journals and laptop cases and all stuff like this. And they all had like inspirational quotes over them. Yeah. And the diaries were all like laid out so you could go in and write down your biggest goals and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm in there thinking, oh, I'd sell this stuff till the day I just love it. I love all that. And I've always been a bit addicted to stationery. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I think one of the keys, Alan, I mean, last year, obviously, we were working together on my website, yeah. and I was in the cooking niche, and I'm not a cook, right? And so the thing I struggled with, because I've always built my own brand as an online marketer, the thing I struggled with was trying to figure out how to build a brand around something I wasn't passionate about. And I think that's a key, don't you? I mean, I think it depends on your personality, but how do you feel that fits into it, building something? Do you think that's important, that you should be passionate about the brand you're building?
I think you have to be passionate about something, right? And it's either got to be about the brand you're building because you've got it's scratching a niche that you want to solve, or you're passionate about the space because it's, for travel would be an example. Or you just got to be passionate about building businesses. I find for me, one of my first businesses, really my first business, real business, was the travel e-commerce business that I mentioned. And that was a passion project for me, right? That scratched my own itch. But I've done, multiple businesses after that, including the one I run now, and I've got another venture that I'm a partner in as well currently. And, those weren't necessarily scratching my own itch or passion projects necessarily, but what I found is that I just love building businesses. Mm-hmm. And what I love about Blue Stout is while I don't necessarily have a passion for running a consulting company per se, right? What I do have a passion for is working with other entrepreneurs, because I'm an entrepreneur and I love building businesses. So what I do, I get to work on a daily basis with entrepreneurs that are building e-commerce companies and helping them understand what's the right lever to pull and how hard to pull it, and then seeing the results from it. And that in and of itself is incredible, right? Mm. So I don't know if you necessarily have to have a passion for the specific industry or vertical, but I think you have to find something that you are passionate about in the business that you choose. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. You only have one life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see brands making?
Oh man. So I think in the early days, right? I think it depends on the stage, right? I think everybody starts to make different mistakes depending upon the stage of the business, and it's almost predictable. So I think it depends on how big you are, right? But if you're starting out from scratch, right? I think the biggest mistake is that I find, especially in e-commerce, is folks not messaging or communicating what they do and not finding that unique value proposition that they bring to the market, or if they think they have it, not communicating it well to a customer. So the example I always give is that if you can clearly communicate value and your uniqueness to a market that desperately needs your product, nothing else really matters in the very beginning, because you're going to get sales, right? And I hear from entrepreneurs all the time, they're like, I don't understand why people aren't buying my product. Why can't we get past 100,000 revenue? It's like, well, look, in your head, you've constructed this concept of why people should buy, but you're not communicating it to them. So that's the biggest problem I see is poor communication of value on your site or in your marketing to your target audience. So that's probably the number one thing holding back really early stage e-commerce businesses.
I was listening to, sorry, to we'll come,
no,
to,
you're fine.
We'll come back to more mistakes, but I was listening to a really good podcast the other day, and I'm terrible with names, and I've forgotten the lady's name. But she and her husband had an optician's, and they decided to start an e-commerce business around, their glasses and all the rest of it. And they started building out their glasses. And I just loved it when I listened to this story. She basically started a Facebook group, and mm-hmm. she started doing Facebook Lives on a weekly basis. And the Facebook group was all around something called dry eye syndrome. Now, who knew that mm-hmm. there was a syndrome called dry eye syndrome, right?
Yep,
but basically, right. She built this massive audience based on this dry eye syndrome. And she made Facebook Lives every week, and she spoke to these guys. And then she used that platform to launch her products, to get feedback on her products, to get feedback on her branding, to really communicate her message, to understand her audience more. And I'm listening to this podcast, Alan, and I'm thinking to myself, because one of the things I really got myself wrapped up in last year was, I'm not a cook, blah, blah, blah. And I look back and I think to myself, gosh, I wish that I'd started a Facebook group at the beginning of the year and got mm-hmm. in there and said, hey, guess what? I'm a really, really busy mum. I don't really like cooking, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to do these videos every week and we're going to discuss different hacks to make life easier in the kitchen, blah, blah, blah. And built an audience around, what I was actually interested in. and then probably been able to use that audience. But the mistake that I made, which I want to communicate to the audience because I think this is important, is I focus so much on, oh, does the website look nice? Are the colors good? Do the images look nice? Is my copy okay? And when you and I spoke, you kept saying to me all the time, Joe, what's your message? How are you communicating that? What's your message? How are you communicating that? Who's your target audience? Who's your, you know, and I give that advice all the time in marketing, but I couldn't kind of get my head around it for my for my products last year. And I think if you've got a business and you're struggling a little bit with what your message is, make it really easy on yourself. You know, everybody's out there, aren't they, on Facebook and Instagram and these places. Go and find who you think your audience might be. Set up a group or a page. Start doing Facebook Live videos. Start talking to them. Get feedback on what you're already doing. And then, you know, you can start to really communicate your message.
We live in a world right now where getting your message out and testing your message in fast iterations is easier than ever before if you have a little bit of money to put behind it too. So I think one great way, Facebook groups, unbelievable. If you want to build a long, like build an audience you can launch to, fantastic way to do it. If you want to just, if you have a concept for a product, right? You think you've got a unique positioning for a product, you know, set aside a couple $100, you know, launch a Facebook brand page. You know, nobody has to know about it. Just launch it so you have something there so you can set up a Facebook ads account and go in and just create, you know, 10 different audiences and test the messaging for a couple days at a time just by posting some comments or some, you know, potential ads into that space. It's something that we do for consulting. You know, and it's something we advise for our e-commerce clients to do is to say when you figure out what that positioning is and you find out and you go, okay, I want to develop a, you know, I want to develop a to-do list notepad for entrepreneurs, right? So let's come up with some messaging around that. What's the unique value proposition of it? Let's go into Facebook ads. Let's find who we think entrepreneurs are. So who else are they following? They're following Tim Ferriss. They're following Tony Robbins. They're following Elon Musk, right? Let's develop a little audience and let's test the messaging at these different audiences and let's see which of these pieces and which of these pieces of copy or which of these messages get the highest levels of engagement. And let's see if there's anybody interested. Before you go out and start to develop a site and develop a product and everything like that, you can validate it really, really quickly using things like paid ads and Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Great advice. Okay, so what would you say are like another couple of huge mistakes that brands make?
Yeah, so the first one is absolutely messaging. The second one we always see is this idea of what we call sort of the quick sale, which is it's really easy when you get into e-commerce, and I, you know, even mentioned it before because it is an equation, right? You have to think of it that way. But at the same time, while your numbers really matter, you can't get so deep that you forget that it really is a human interaction. And so what we see a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs do is think about it as, okay, person hits my site, we got to get them to convert, we got to get them to order at this value. And it needs to happen all at the same time versus thinking about your brand and your site as an ecosystem that exists both on and off your site. Much like somebody who would come into your store to buy something, maybe they step in one day, they browse, they look around, they step out, right? Maybe they come back a couple of days later, browse again, you know, step out, right? So you have to think about when somebody comes to your site, that's the start of building a relationship. And you don't necessarily have to expect them to make a purchase on that first visit. What you need to do is set up an ecosystem and an environment where you can start to build a relationship with that potential customer over time using other assets like email and social. So one of the big mistakes we see brands make once they start getting a little bit of traction is focusing too much on that quick sale versus setting up the appropriate systems and acquiring customers through email and social so you can nurture and build a relationship with them before they're ready to buy. And in the early days, that's incredibly important because it's part of building your audience and it's part of building up a group of people that will eventually buy from you. And we see a lot of entrepreneurs get really frustrated because, you know, they'll pay for all this traffic and, you know, only a couple percentage points will convert. And we have to remind them that, look, these people are browsing and it's your job to stay in front of them. And it's your job to put systems in place that get them to opt into your world so that you can then nurture them on platforms like Instagram or email. And that's a long-term play that a lot of early-stage entrepreneurs, you know, forget about because they're so focused on getting people to convert immediately.
I think a lot of that comes down to, I mean, You know, marketers have a lot to answer for with people who think, hey, I'm going to start an e-commerce business and make money, you know, by clicking my fingers. And I think, you know, quite a lot of people, they read stories and they see success stories and people selling courses on how to build an e-commerce business, blah, blah, blah. And so they think, yay, you know, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to design my own t-shirt and then I'm going to, you know, be able to just go out on Facebook and do a few ads and Bob's your uncle kind of thing. But it's just like any business, isn't it, Alan? I mean, you know, it's a business. I mean, these things take time, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're going to, you know, you're going to hit roadblocks along the way. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's, we get a lot of inbound from people that are in that position where they just launched a store and 2 weeks have gone by and haven't made a sale, mm-hmm. right? And they're freaking out and they don't understand why. And I think it's exactly what you just said, which is there's a lot of marketers out there that are selling, you know, they're selling snake oil. In the sense that, look, all you have to do is launch a shop, buy a store and a product and Facebook ads, and you can build a $1 million business. And it just doesn't work that way. It always, you know, marketing is marketing is marketing. Business is business is business. And you have to first develop who your market is, what's the product and what's its unique positioning. And then you got to remember that that customer is only going to buy from you if they trust you. Mm-hmm. And that typically requires building a relationship with them first. There's always going to be that top kind of 1% of the market that will buy instantaneously. But everybody else is going to require multiple touch points with your brand. And the more that you can expect that and build in systems into your site that will actually facilitate that and build that into your marketing, the more successful you're going to be in the long run.
And what are some of the great ways that you've seen with some of the brands you've worked with to begin that relationship? What are some really cool things that brands have done to kind of start to build that nurturing process?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the biggest one that everybody's aware of is Instagram, right? Instagram is probably had the biggest influence on e-commerce, you know, over the last 5 years than anything else.
Really? Other than maybe that's Facebook. Interesting.
I'd say maybe than Facebook ads. Facebook ads probably takes the number one spot. Yeah. But Instagram's got to be number two. Because just the visual connection, especially when you're dealing with physical products, that visual connection that you have with Instagram and building audiences on Instagram. And everybody is on Instagram, right? And it's not like Facebook where you're seeing, you know, posts and updates, but it's a very visual experience. And so when you're scrolling through your feed and you're following brands, even if you're just seeing photos and images, you know, once or maybe a couple times a week, it's enough of a touch point where you're constantly building up this subconscious trust factor and trust level with a brand, right? And so if you have customers that are on your Instagram accounts that are engaging, not even engaging, but just seeing your content, and becoming more familiar with who you are and what you do, those customers are going to be 10x more likely to convert on that next ad that they end up seeing from you, or that next email marketing, you know, email they get from you, because they've subconsciously started to develop a relationship with you because they see you in their Instagram feeds. So that's a great way. Email is still fantastic, right? Developing content around your vertical. So if you are, for example, so quite actually going to your example you just mentioned earlier about dry eye syndrome?
Yeah,
like that.
Dry eye syndrome.
So developing content around these problems or developing content that's specific to your industry is another great way to nurture and build a relationship before asking for a sale. So one of the big things that we always, you know, preach and recommend for our entrepreneurs is, you know, before you put somebody through a sales sequence, make sure you've indoctrinated them using content as a great way to build trust and build a relationship. So content, email, and Instagram are three fantastic ways to do that.
Oh gosh, so much to go with there, Alan. We could talk for hours. Okay, so let me just touch on a couple of things you said there. So first of all, Instagram. Isn't that amazing that if you think about it, years ago, the way that people saw your brand was television ads, yeah? Or radio ads, right? And then then along came Facebook. And I remember when I started my Facebook journey and I was out doing various education courses on Facebook ads, and I would talk about the direct response versus the brand building. Right. And so you had either had your direct response, i.e. here's an instant offer, sign up for it right now. Or you kind of did your ads where you just did nice images and you had your logo and you told a little story. But of course, I didn't encourage too many people to brand build because it's expensive. You know, Facebook ads are expensive. Yep. So you're looking for some kind of result that you can measure. And it's also difficult to measure. So you're looking for a result you can measure, i.e. a direct response. But now you've got Instagram and it's kind of taken over that whole whole brand building thing, hasn't it? It's that you can right. place images day after day after day, hour after hour, and it is that whole brand building thing.
Absolutely. And then you can leverage influencer networks and influencers in your vertical. So now, not only now are your, you know, if you've got your target market really dialed in, not only are they following you and your brand, but your products are being, you know, positioned with influencers that they're also following. So as opposed to just seeing you in their feed, they're now seeing you and your products in multiple people's feeds. And it becomes it's really powerful. It's a really, really powerful platform for e-commerce. The point where we see, you know, the term that we use in the space is called digitally native vertical brands. And so these are brands that developed online, so they're digital natives. They're, you know, fully integrated, so they're fully vertically integrated. So they manufacture and sell their own products online direct to consumers. And a lot of these digitally native vertical brands, you know, started recently. We've seen a lot of them start on Instagram. You know, they don't even start with the site. It's, you know, it's founders that have a concept and develop a concept, and they build an audience using Instagram first, and they validate product first, and they build demand first. And then they launch the pre-sale with a site, and they drive all their Instagram traffic to it. We're actually working with a brand out of Germany right now that did just that. It's an incredibly powerful platform.
I love that. I mean, I really love that. And the little point that you said as well about they haven't even built a site yet. I mean, this is a discussion I was having with my group earlier this week about priorities and productivity and all the rest of it. And I was saying, do you know what? Stop planning and thinking and all the rest of it. Just get out there and start doing. You know, if you've got an idea and you want to see if it works, just get out there and start telling everybody about it. Because the sooner you get out and actually just do and tell and communicate, the sooner you're going to get feedback, and then you can really start to rock and roll. So love that. So then coming back to content as well, Alan, now this is a biggie because I'm a content marketer and have been for a few years, other than the last year or so where I've had a bit of a step back. But how important is content in today's environment? Is it that you read lots of different stories, you know, and I say never listen to anything you read on the internet. Oh, it's on the tinternet. It must be true. how important is content in today's? Is that still like a real, you know, something huge that brands should be considering?
Yeah. And I think ultimately it depends on what you do, right? And what's your product and what problem are you solving? That's really going to influence the type of content that you produce. But absolutely, right? And it's not just, you know, blogs, it's not just written content anymore. It's video, it's audio. You know, it's Instagram. It's sort of leveraging all these platforms. You look at, you know, one of the, you know, very, you know, at least if you're in the e-commerce space, a very well-known company that had a lot of success on the Shopify platforms. They promote them a lot. It's a company called Luxie Hair, and they sell hair extensions. And Luxie really developed an audience using content on YouTube first. So they would do styling tips and styling recommendations and how to use hair extensions and install them and, you know, what outfits, you know, to use which with, you know, whom. And so they developed this entire audience online and YouTube with video content. And that's what that led to their success in the e-commerce space. So it doesn't have to be a blog on your e-commerce site, right? I mean, that's one way to do it. But really leveraging and utilizing content on other platforms is probably the faster way to leverage new audiences.
So like, for instance, okay, a couple of years ago, I got big into yoga. Right, I'm 2 years down the line. I'm still not very good at it. Mm-hmm. Still not very good at it, but I love it. So imagine I had this concept where I wanted to sell yoga gear. I wanted to sell yoga mats. Mm-hmm. I wanted to sell rollers. I wanted to sell blocks. I wanted to sell, you know, pants, clothes, all the rest of it. I could spend X amount of time, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, whatever. And I could do yoga videos on YouTube. I could talk about yoga on Facebook. I could, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. I could really just build my whole yoga audience. And then when they're almost crying out for more information, then that's when I could launch all my stuff and say, hey, absolutely, here's all my yoga stuff. So you build your audience first. That's, you know, oh God, I love all of this. I do. I really do.
I love it. It's so true. And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it's, you know, there's a couple of ways you can do it, right? A, you've got an audience. And so it allows you to test and validate, right? You can actually ask and get feedback. You can launch a product, and if it bombs, you know, launch another one, right? So it's the value of building an audience first is pretty powerful. The yoga ones are great because I actually use that for a lot of our clients as an example for content to develop. You know, if you're selling yoga mats, A, you can build an audience, but also if you already have a product that is yoga mats, right? If you already have something, if you already have a small business that you've launched, you can still utilize content to build better relationships. So when people come to the site, you can offer things like free online, you know, yoga classes, right? You can offer these videos and pieces of content that are tailored to your market as a way to get people to opt in to your environment and your ecosystem before they might be ready to buy. So the content is great for building an audience, you know, pre-product launch or sort of pre-store launch, but it's also a great way to take the audience that you currently have or the traffic that you might currently be buying and rev it up, right? And get people really engaged and loving your brand versus just pitching them products all the time.
Now, this brings to mind a good question though, Alan, because a lot of engagement and content delivery and creating that rapport and all that kind of stuff online these days is about live interaction. People love the whole Facebook Live thing. They love video. You know, that's really, I mean, you know, gone are the days when you could just slap up a blog post and kind of, you know, be behind the scenes if you like. But what if, what if you don't want to, like with me last year, what if I don't want to be the face of that brand, but I really want to build an audience and I want some kind of live interaction and, you know, I really want to create rapport, but I don't want to be the face of the brand. What are some ideas for that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we've seen people do a few different things. So first off, you know, if you don't want to be the personal face of the brand, but you're really early stage, you know, creating personas, right? We've had clients that create personas around, you know, to essentially create almost like a mascot for the brand. And then they create content around that mascot. We've got somebody who's in sort of the wedding ring and engagement space right now, who's done just that. So that's sort of one way to go. The other way to do it would be to find somebody that you could partner with that is comfortable doing that, or an influencer in your space. So what you'll see a lot of brands do in the early days too is you'll find sort of an entrepreneur that's got a great idea for a product that's in a market, and they'll go out and they'll find an influencer, maybe an Instagram influencer that's very influential in that vertical, and they'll partner up with them as sort of a co-promoter, maybe not even a co-founder, but just as sort of an ambassador of the brand. And we've seen that work really well too.
A great example of that, actually, I mean, a super successful guy online is Ezra Firestone. And he's built his whole makeup business using a lady who was a makeup artist.
Yep.
I mean, that's just brilliant, isn't it? So he's kind of obviously the operator and she's the face. And, you know, there's a successful, very successful e-commerce business.
Incredibly successful. They've done really well.
Last time I watched a video of his at the end of last year sometime, they were up into the eight figures, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. I think they're well above 20 million, I think.
Gosh. Wow. Mind you, it's a cracking brand. I mean, let's just have a moment on that, because this is just such a great example. What a great brand. So they have makeup products for, I can't even remember what it's called now. Boom by Cindy Joseph. That's what it's called. And so they have these makeup products, and they don't even have that many. They might only have 10 products max on their site. I'm talking straight off the top of my head there without looking, but they don't have that many lines, but it's all for ladies, mature ladies. So it's ladies over 40, ladies over 50. And the lady who's the face of the brand is an ex makeup artist who herself is in her, I don't know what she is now, 50, you know, mid to late 50s, I think. Very proud of getting older, and, you know, and she does all these videos on, you know, how women of a certain age should wear makeup. And they've just really connected with their target audience. I mean, you know, the rapport, that connection with their target audience is absolutely, and that's the secret of their success.
Oh yeah. And if you want to break it down even further, right? So there really is a fantastic business model. And these are sort of the tenets that I see that make it as successful as it's been. And if you're sort of thinking about e-commerce, these are the things that I'd be looking at to replicate. But the first is they picked a product and they positioned it and carved out a niche that didn't really exist online yet. So you have a ton of anti-aging creams and you have a ton of, you know, facial creams and things like that. But what they did is they positioned it for women who weren't afraid of getting older, right? So it was almost positioned as not the anti-aging, but the
pro-age.
Pro-age, exactly. That's the term. I was trying to think of what it was.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It didn't exist. They created it, right? So that's A, they created a market niche that didn't exist. Two, they utilized influencers, and they utilized, you know, specifically Cindy Joseph as the influencer to produce content around it. So there's a personality around it that people could connect with. So, you know, we call them target avatars. So that's your target persona or target customer. These target avatars can look at her and go, okay, I can resonate with this person. And so there's instantaneous relationship building with the brand. So that's the second piece. The third piece is it's a consumable product. So people use it, they love it, and they buy it again. So it's naturally, it has a naturally built in high repeat purchase rate, which is what you want, right? Somebody comes to buy one product from you, and if you sell, no, I'm trying to think of a great example here, but you know, if you sell like a, you know, like a mattress, right? How many times are you going and buying a new mattress or a new bed frame, right? So if you sell like a single product, it's, you have to be profitable on that first product versus a product that's a consumable, that's a repeat purchase. That customer is going to constantly come back again and again, not just to buy, but you can also upsell them on things like subscription programs, because you know they're going to run out of this product, you know, once every 2 months, let's say. So it naturally has an incredibly high repeat purchase rate. And the second piece is it's a product that's not, it's not incredibly expensive to produce, right? The production of this is not that hard, right? But because it has a premium brand associated with it, you can sell it. That delta between manufacturing cost and price point is abnormally high. And then finally, because it's a small product, shipping costs are really low.
Yeah.
So it keeps your shipping prices low, and it keeps your return shipping prices low. So you can offer things like free shipping and free returns really easily without getting killed. So it's it really is a beautiful e-commerce model.
When we finished, I'm going to go back over this. I'm going to grab that section and I'm going to write that out in the show notes so you can see these are the key tenets. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Because that's just
beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah, it's really, really good. Gosh, so many great tips and things there, Alan. I'm just looking through my notes to see if there's anything else I wanted to ask you on some of the things you were saying there. When somebody builds their e-commerce website, so let's say, for instance, they're going to use Shopify or WooCommerce or whatever, what are some of the most important elements that they need to consider? Because one of the issues when you start building a website is you really do start focusing on a million different things, like the color of your logo or, you know, whatever. So what are some of the most important things people need to think of when they're kind of putting their e-commerce site together?
Yeah, so it depends a little bit upon, you know, your brand and your market. But, you know, the bare minimum, the two pieces, again, that we see people get wrong all the time when they start is A, messaging, right? Messaging and positioning. And, you know, we'll see people go out and they'll spend, you know, thousands of dollars for a designer to design their store, but they won't think twice about sort of the copy or the copywriting or the messaging on the site. So the first piece is really dig in around developing who your target customer is, and then what's your unique value proposition, and make sure you make it incredibly clear. So that's step one, regardless of what platform or theme or anything you decide to go with. And the second is we see a lot of people skimp on buying a theme to start with, and they'll do something that's free online, and it just looks terrible. And while I am not a, you know, proponent of saying if you're just starting out with a limited budget to go spend a couple, you know, go spend thousands of dollars on a design firm, what I am saying is go spend $150 on a premium theme that looks really nice, because people will associate your brand with the quality of the product that you produce and the quality of the service you provide. And you want people to show up and have a positive impression of you and your brand, because that's going to translate to a positive impression of your product. So investing a little bit upfront to do that is well worth it. But the very first thing is messaging and communicating your value proposition to the customer. That's that comes first.
Yeah, absolutely. That is that. Yeah. Okay. I won't get into that, but that was one of the biggest lessons I learned last year. Yeah.
But it's so basic, and you almost take it and you kind of don't think twice about it. But I, you know, that is hands down the number one cause of poor sales on early stage businesses. Like, we'll go in for clients that are just struggling to get sales on their site, and all we'll do is say, hey, we need to update your positioning and your messaging. and it's an instantaneous change. If, you know, assuming you've got a good product, assuming you have a good market, right? You can't just make that up out of thin air. But assuming you have those and your messaging is just wrong, the messaging alone can take you from, you know, we had a store that was in the pharmaceutical space last year that was converting at like a half a percentage point, and just updating their messaging alone took them from a half a percentage point to a 3% conversion rate. You know, so it was like a 400% conversion increase, whatever it was. It's a dramatic, you know, it quadrupled their business.
Have you got any examples of sites that listeners could maybe go and have a look at to see their messaging and stuff on their homepage?
Oh yeah. So we've got a number of great brands. See, the guys I would recommend that are absolutely killing it on Shopify right now is one of my favorite brands and the client of ours called Taft, and they produce direct to market dress shoes for men. So if you go to taftclothing.com,
it's T-A-F-T, yeah.
Yep, taftclothing.com.
Okay.
These guys do a great job. Messaging is fantastic. Branding is fantastic. It's very clear. They're a great site to look at. We have and then there's another client of ours called, that's a hair extension company called Heat Free Hair, heatfreehair.com. And we can put this in the show notes, but
Absolutely, yeah.
They also do a fantastic job with their branding and positioning as well.
Okay.
And it's focused on sort of how they're communicating their value to their market.
Great. I will put those in the show notes. So what do you think is the future of e-commerce, Alan? It's been an explosion over the last couple of years. Obviously, you know, Amazon kind of started the roll all those years ago, and then all of a sudden, sort of boom, over the last few years, e-commerce sites have sprung up left, right, and center. Where do you see this all going?
Yeah, it seems to be changing every year, right? I think the biggest movement right now is around these micro brands, which is fantastic for entrepreneurs because it's a huge opportunity if you're looking to get in the space. But it's, you know, where we used to, you know, look at really big brands and think, oh man, I want to buy, you know, a pair of Nike shoes, or I want to buy, you know, something from this massive brand name that everybody knows about. The movement now is more towards micro brands that are unique, and people want to have unique items or items that have unique stories behind them. So we're not all going to Sears and buying Sears branded products anymore. We're finding these cool niche brands on Instagram and going, man, these guys produce great shoes, or these guys, you know, these guys produce these awesome custom skis, right? All these different micro brands are developing their own products in the space. And because the barriers to starting e-commerce and the barriers to sourcing products from, you know, places like China, and the barriers to advertising and building an audience with things like Facebook ads and micro-targeting on Facebook ads, it allows these brands to exist that are just, you know, small, you know, 6 to maybe 7-figure brands that couldn't operate, you know, 10 years ago, now can operate incredibly profitably. And so we're seeing a lot of these pop up utilizing things like Instagram as their sales channel, maybe utilizing just Instagram and a Shopify site as their sales channel. And I think that at least over the next few years is going to continue to grow because the barrier to entry has just become so low. So I think that is probably one of the biggest trends. And the second is just going to be mobile. Just seeing, you know, the constant evolution of purchasing and buying on mobile and how that barrier to purchase continues to drop.
Okay, let me come back to mobile because that's really important. But before we go there, just with these micro brands, what about the trust element, Alan? Because obviously with Amazon, one of the great selling points of Amazon and being a seller on Amazon is that Amazon's already built the audience. They've got the brand, they've got the audience, they've got the credit cards in the site, they've got they've got the operation as well, obviously, the whole shipping, delivery, blah, blah, blah. That's another whole conversation. But
yep.
The big thing is they've got that trust. So as a micro brand, how are brands getting out there and developing and creating that trust to buy from them?
Yep, content, right? Instagram is a great example of it, where you've got a single founder who has a product that they're passionate about, and they've developed a huge audience on Instagram where they're doing, you know, Instagram stories every day, and they're, you know, walking through the factories and showing the product, or they're showing a product being shipped out, or they're kind of giving you a behind the scenes look. That intimate interaction with the people behind the micro brands is what's building trust. And then leveraging that also with a network of other, you know, Instagram influencers and influencers in the space are building trust. So that's really breaking down that trust barrier.
So that's that. It's what we've already talked about, and it really is storifying. Yep. It really is storifying your brand. You know, coming up with your story and your. And do you also think that people are now becoming more accepting of e-commerce generally? So therefore, that's also helping. Like a few years ago, you wouldn't have bought off anybody except Amazon because that's it. But now, so many more people are doing it. Do you think people are just generally feeling a bit more comfortable and okay now with buying from other brands?
Yeah, I do. I think that's the other big piece of it too. And it's generational, right? It's, you know, I'm in my early 30s, but you know, I have a younger sister that's in her early 20s, and she, you know, her propensity to, you know, buy off of her phone is even bigger than I am, right? I still make most of my purchases on, you know, my computer, you know, but I buy everything online. She buys everything online, but she does it on her phone when she's on the bus on the way to work, right? So that propensity to make purchase decisions not only online but also off of your phone is growing exponentially with younger generations, and so that's just going to continue to move.
So let's talk about the phone, because I'm exactly the same as you. I might go, I'm in my mid-40s, Alan, so I'm really the old one here. I might look at my phone and find, and I do remember a couple of years ago, or maybe longer, 3 or 4 years ago, when all the marketers were saying, you know, the trend is that people will look and search for things on their phone but end the transaction online. So, you know, you must have the good search capability and all the details and that, but you must have that transference, that nice clear transference to your website, because that's generally where people are going to end the transaction. It was some kind of Google thing, I think, and it was trying to ascertain people in the buying cycle. Yeah. So mm-hmm. For those of us from the dark ages, I will search and look on my phone, but I will always finish the transaction on my computer. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop doing that now, because I need to get down with the kids and start, you know.
you're still in the majority, right? So when we work with clients, one of the big things we talk about at a certain stage, you know, there's other things that are more important, but at a certain stage, is focusing on that transfer of mobile to desktop, because it does still exist, and making sure that you do have options for people to say a product or email themselves product or give themselves a way to go from phone to desktop, because the majority of transactions still occur on desktop or tablet. It's not occurring on phone, but the trend is very quickly moving towards phone. And, you know, we've got a brand right now that we're working with that's, you know, they hit 7 figures within their first 12 months. And so they're a small upstart, but very fast growing. And, you know, literally 90% of their transactions, you know, of a 7-figure company are on mobile.
Wow.
So these are for products that are, you know, $100, $125. So it's not like they're just buying a book on Amazon that's $6.95. You know, they're buying pieces of, you know, jewelry and watches on their mobile phone, which is pretty incredible. Now, their target market is millennials. It's young, you know, 20 to 30-year-old millennials. And that's – people are just becoming ever more comfortable buying on mobile. So – and that trend is changing very, very, very fast. So it's not a question of, you know, when. It's a question of, you know, just like how soon, right? It's very quick.
Absolutely. And I was reading the other day that apparently the major credit cards now, your MasterCards, your Visas and everything, are collaborating to try and figure out a way to create their own kind of PayPal button. You know, so their own buy with one button with your credit card without having to put all your details in. So, of course, you know, everything is trending to literally being able to just click and make a purchase.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. I'm conscious of your time, Alan. I don't want to keep you for too long. We really have gone through some awesome stuff on this podcast. But before we go, I do just want to touch on you, because you are an entrepreneur and you've created this amazing business out there really helping other entrepreneurs, which is just brilliant. I love that whole giving back. And I mean, it's a business, but you're giving back, you're helping other entrepreneurs build their businesses, filling lots of buckets out there, which is fantastic. What's the future for Blue Stout? Where are you taking your company over the next few years?
Yeah, so our focus over the next 2 years is going to be really doubling down on what we've done the last few years, which is focusing on 6- and 7-figure e-commerce entrepreneurs and helping them scale. We do it in two ways. One is we work with clients like a full agency. We have a full design development team, and we'll step in and essentially kind of take things over and right the ship and help them pull the right levers, and help them scale. And we do that like an agency would. And then the other offering, which is one of my personal passion projects and the area that I'm really looking to spend the majority of my time in the next couple of years, is the one-on-one consulting and coaching that we do with, you know, typically younger brands. So they're typically six-figure brands that are just starting out, maybe don't have the full budget to go and spend, you know, $100,000 in agency, but they still need the same level of expertise and insights that agency would provide. And so we've developed a very high touch one-on-one program at Blue Stealth that allows us to still work with those younger brands and do it at a price point that they can afford and can help them kind of get to that next level. So doubling down on that new business that we've been running for the last year or so is going to be my main focus. And then ultimately the plan is to start getting back into the e-commerce game ourselves. We've got a number of businesses and products that we want to launch and other brands we want to partner with. And so we're going to eventually develop our own sort of Blue Stout Labs division that's going to be focusing on building some of these micro brands.
How many of you are there in your – are you the main director or are you a co-director?
I am. Yep, so I'm the main director.
Your company?
Yep, it's my company. Yep.
And how many people do you have working with you?
We're 15.
Okay, awesome. And I love the fact that when I signed up to have some coaching with you last year, Alan, I got coaching with you directly. I love that. And at the same time, I ask you, how do you structure your day? Because obviously you're building a business and you're also trying to get your message out there about your business. And then, you know, I doubt forever you'll be able to give one-to-one coaching, but you were able to. So, you know, what are some of the key things that you, because you've also got a young family, right?
I do. Well, I've got a one-year-old son.
Yeah, exactly. So how are you structuring your day to get this is a question I get asked all the time. I got asked the other day, Joe, tell me what you do in your day for maximum productivity. And I'm like, God, I'm the last person to ask. So how do you do it, Alan?
Yeah, so I can admit it's a work in progress. And it's something that I actually ask every entrepreneur that I talk to and know. And I'm lucky enough to have a lot very good friends and close friends that are very successful entrepreneurs. And so I a lot of what I do, I steal from other people and I kind of find and fit what works for me. But for me, I'm very analytical and I'm very process driven. So I have to have sort of structure around my day or else something gets done. And so for me, it's, you know, I'm an early riser. I wake up about 5 a.m. and I like to read and drink coffee for about an hour and a half or so. And I typically start work, 6:37-ish. So I'm a very, very early riser. And that's what kind of helps me set the day. But for me, it's the way I structure my time to make sure I get things done is I have, you know, each day of the week is a different sort of theme. So Mondays are, you know, team meetings and team planning. You know, Tuesdays for me are all about what we call lead volume and opportunity generation. So that's marketing, essentially. And then Wednesdays and Thursdays are, for me, client days. So those are days where we, you know, if I need to talk with our, you know, agency clients, I'm working with them one-on-one. For the folks that are working through our, we call it e-com growth program, and we're doing calls with them. We do sort of one-on-one and group calls now. So we're doing that on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And then Fridays are my catch-all days. So whatever didn't get done on Monday through Thursday gets done on Friday. And I'm old school in the sense that I essentially have a notebook every morning and you know, we have initiatives that we're trying to accomplish on a monthly and quarterly basis that we set every month and every quarter. And I basically sit down and I look at the whiteboard and I go, okay, what's the monthly objective? Are we there yet? What's the quarterly objective? Are we there yet? And I map out my day with pen and paper of what I need to get done that day to help us move us towards the next goal.
Awesome.
So I just cross it off a list. I'm a list maker. So that's how I run my day.
And do you find that you generally achieve your goals?
It depends. We always achieve at least a goal. I find that we end up making too many goals. So I think like most entrepreneurs, we typically bite off more than we can chew. Mm. So I think it's rare that we ever accomplish all of our goals that we set for the month or for the quarter, but we always end up accomplishing at least one or two of them. So I think the better way is I probably need to only set one or two goals a quarter versus the, you know, the five or six that we're constantly setting.
Yeah, I know that feeling. And what's your why, Alan? Why are you doing this? Why are you growing this business? What's your driving force behind it all?
Behind Blue Style specifically, or just, you know, entrepreneurialism in general?
Yeah, I think behind entrepreneurialism generally, just behind your fire to build businesses and get out there and do what you're doing.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, ultimately, it's, you know, I think it's changed over the years. You know, initially when I first started, it was, you know, I was sort of part of that initial sort of, you know, Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week tribe, right? I read the book and was like, oh man, you mean I can start my own company and run my own day without having to work, you know, 16 hours a day in finance? Because I used to work in finance, and I used to work in Chicago and New York in the finance industry. So initially, it was, for me, it was an outlet to, you know, build a lifestyle around what I wanted to do. And so entrepreneurship was sort of an escape. And after I started it and started working on companies, it quickly just became a passion. This idea that you can come up with a concept and just put some, you know, a little bit of sweat equity and a lot of, you know, work and time into it, and it becomes this living, breathing entity, this business that can be self-sustaining and can employ other people and can take care of, you know, my family and you know, send my son to college one day. Like that concept to me, I think is what makes it's what makes the world work. You know, entrepreneurialism and capitalism is what kind of gives everybody a chance at a better life. And being, you know, entrepreneur means being at the crux of that. And I think that's really my why. So I just love being part of that community and being able to build a business.
You know, from the beginning of this interview through the whole last hour talking to you, I literally can feel my excitement building through the whole conversation. Do you know what I mean? That's what entrepreneurialism is about, isn't it? You just get so much opportunity and so much we can do and so much fun we can have. And it's just great. So you said that you were in your early 30s. So if there was one thing you could have said to yourself, let's say in your early 20s, knowing what you now know about life, about business, with the experiences that you've been through, with the things that you've done, if there was something you probably could have said to yourself early days, maybe early 20s, when you were just sort of starting out in the world, in the working world, what would it have been?
Do it faster. Like, do it now. I think there's a tendency to overanalyze and kind of get analysis paralysis versus doing. And what I would have done is I would have started sooner. You know, knowing what I know now and what I've learned over the last 10 years of doing this, is that nobody teaches you this in school. You know, nobody teaches you how to be a CEO. There's no such thing as CEO school, right? Like, this kind of stuff and being an entrepreneur is only done by getting in the trenches and doing it. And you have to do it for a while before you get good at it. So I wish I would have started even sooner.
Brilliant. Alan, this has been an absolutely fantastic interview. Thank you ever so much for your time today. I know that people listening are going to really appreciate the information. I will obviously put everywhere that people can find you and find out more about your e-com program and what Blue Stout does in the show notes. So people will be able to come and connect with you directly and say hi and find you on social media, etc. But just thank you so much for your insights, your experience, and your time today.
No, absolutely. I'm happy to. And if anybody has any questions or want to hit me up, I obviously love talking about this, especially e-commerce. So feel free to reach out.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. To join in the conversation, please head over to joebarnesonline.com, where you can find links to podcasts, show notes, and sign up to download my free ebook, How to Build a Business You Can Run from Anywhere in the World. If you have a moment, please subscribe and quickly rate this podcast. I'm not sure where you're listening to this, but if you happen to be on iTunes, it literally takes a tenth of a second to hit the little stars, and your rating will ensure it gets out to more people and impacts as many as possible. Lastly, I'm super passionate about creating a movement of philanthropic investors, so please head over to joebarnesonline.com/microangel. To find out more about how you can become a micro angel and with just $25 impact thousands of women and children who desperately need our help. Thank you so much. I do hope you've enjoyed today's episode. See you on the next podcast. And in the meantime, get out there and make life happen.